Story Behind the Song with Paul Turner.
So it is Story Behind the Song. I'm Paul Turner, and this time we're speaking to Barry Tomes. Welcome along.
Hello, Paul. How are you today? You good?
Yes, thank you. How are you doing?
Very good, mate. Thank you for inviting me to do this. It's very interesting, and it brings back some good memories talking about this song.
That's good. One of my favourites as well. So what was your very first song you ever bought?
The first record I ever bought, a 7-inch vinyl, was Hot Love by T-Rex. And I bought that on February the 12th, 1971. How about that?
Cool, you remember
that? I can still remember it.
Remember the date. Was it from a shop?
Yeah, I've got that was the date it was released. I went and bought it on the day it was released. I'd heard it played on national radio at the time. And I'd already previously heard of T-Rex because Ride a White Swan was a big hit in our school where we were, and there was a dancer called Tina, and she was the only black girl in our school, as I remember, but she was the best dancer. So I remember her, and I remember Ride the White Swan, although I didn't buy that till afterwards. And then I kind of thought, well, I kind of like this group. You know, this is a good group. I like this T-Rex, whoever they are. And then when the next song came out, which was their next release, which was Hot Love, I went straight out and bought it. I paid 35 pence. Right. I mean, I think singles probably when they were last selling in the shops were probably £2 or £2.49. So I paid 35 pence way back then, which was excellent. And it started a big love affair with music for me because I, at that time, obviously I was, you know, 16, 17 years old or no, younger than that, probably 15. And I remember enjoying music as a kid. I enjoyed growing up listening to a lot of the Motown stuff because my sisters enjoyed it. But I'd never thought that music would be an amazing thing in my life. I never thought it would be a big thing. And I certainly never realised that buying that record was caused me two problems. One, I got home, and of course, we were poor. We never had a record player. I never actually played that record for nearly 6 months after I bought it. How wild is that? I bought a 7-inch single. I mean, I've got about 30,000 now, 7-inch vinyl, but I bought my first one ever, 35p, went home, realising I couldn't even play it. I still tuned into Stuart McHenry, I think, on national radio, listening to T-Rex, but I couldn't actually play the record. What a geezer I was.
That's right, and it was John Peel who actually brought them to fame, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he did. He was very behind them with the Tyrannosaurus Rex, which went on their albums. They'd done two or three double albums but before then, and I'd never heard of them. And as I said, first come across Ride a White Swan. Hot Love was released on the 12th of February 1971 on a label called Fly Records. And I remember, the other song I can remember being on that label was John Congas, Tokoloshe Man. And this T-Rex song went to number one. It was number one for 6 weeks in the UK. And he actually, because he didn't have a lot of success in America, although he really wanted to, he did have one number one with Get It On, but they changed the name to Bang A Gong. But this song actually still, it did chart in the Hot 100, in what they called it, the Billboard 100 in America. Got to number 72, and he got to number 47 in Canada, but it went to number one in the UK and stayed there for 6 weeks. And at the time, that type of hit record would sell 2 or 3 million copies, you know, physical. That's a physical vinyl, so there's a lot of money generated then. And also, I mean, the producer who still now does work, and I met him, I think, about a year ago, Tony Visconti, was very, very big working with David Bowie. He'd done a lot of stuff with David Bowie, so he was quite a well-known producer, and he produced all the early sort of T-Rex things. And the other thing that was great about T-Rex when they first came out, first of all, when I went to see them live, it was only £2.50 a ticket. He kept the tickets. I think then the average ticket price was £5 or £6. He kept the ticket prices down. I went to see him at the Odeon in New Street in Birmingham. But also, when he released a single, he always believed in doing a maxi single where he'd put two tracks on the B-side. And one of them's one of my favourite T-Rex tracks called Woodland Rock, and another one was King of the Mountain Cometh. So you got good value for your 35p in them days.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, do you remember what was on the B-side? But obviously you do.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, as I say, I've got about 30,000 7-inch, and I've got millions of albums. But one of the things I did a lot in back in them days, and I think it was because of T-Rex, because obviously when I went on and bought more records, I noticed that most of them just had an A-side and a B-side. So I was quite fascinated that Mark Bolan put two tracks on the B-side. And it made me realise there was always another song. And obviously there's some famous songs like Rod Stewart's Maggie May was originally the B-side. Reason to Believe was the A-side. It got turned over and became a massive hit. I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor, that was a B-side. The record company didn't think it would be a hit. She got it played in 54 Club in New York, and that became a hit. So the B-sides often could do something. And also, I remember just thinking about B-sides. I remember The Sweet. They didn't write any of their hits. It was, you know, Nicky Chinn and Mike Chapman. But every one of their B-sides were written by themselves. And I guarantee you, if anybody wants to go back and listen to all the old Sweet singles, that's where Queen got their influence from. That they were as good as Queen, their own stuff, although the glam rock was their commercial stuff. So I've always been a big fan of checking out the B-side, because I always believed, you know, that there's some hidden gems there, you know, so I enjoyed that. It was a bit like, I've always loved my vinyl. I've enjoyed not just listening to the music, but actually physically touching, caressing and holding the vinyl and reading the sleeve notes, which most of that's gone now, really, I suppose.
That's very true. And some of the B-sides were actually better than the A-sides, weren't they?
Definitely, yeah. Well, that was a couple of examples I gave you. Both those records were massive. And they, you know, they were originally only meant to be B-sides and stuff. And then, of course, a bit later on, they introduced double A-sides. When the record company weren't quite sure, they'd call it a double A-side so the DJs could play whichever one they want. Because when these records first come out, and I've got a few examples of this for T-Rex, when a vinyl was sent to the radio station, it had a great big capital A stamp right across the label so that they would play the correct side when it was at, you know, at the radio station. And they're worth a lot more, like an original copy, say, of Hot Love by T-Rex on the Fly label in the original sleeves. It's probably worth about £10. But if you've got what you call the advanced promo copy with the big A on it, probably worth about £150. You know, massive increase, really. And I've got quite a few rare things like that of T-Rex. And another interesting little ditty about this song, which I don't know if you probably remember a band called The Turtles from America. I think you probably know them. A lot of people don't. But when the song was written, obviously Mark Bolan was quite influenced by a lot of American stuff. And the band called The Turtles, they had Howard Kalin and Mark Volman were two members of that band. They actually did, if you remember the song, it was four verses before you even got a chorus, which was very unusual. Then you got 20 la-la-las. All those la-las were sung by these two guys, Howard Kamen and Mark Volman from The Turtles. So that's a little interesting thing a lot of people didn't know.
Yeah, it's strange because it was full of that at the end, la-la-la-la-la-la.
Yeah.
And we all loved the song, even though there wasn't much to it.
Yeah, well, do you know what? No, there wasn't much to it, but do you know it was influenced by Hey Jude, which a lot of people don't know, because Hey Jude sort of goes on and on at the end, doesn't it? You know, and that was one of the influences for the song. But as I said, for me personally, on a personal level, it was kind of strange because it was almost like buying a car but not being able to drive it for 6 months. So I bought this vinyl because I got turned on to T-Rex because I really fancied this girl called Tina at school. And then I went out and bought the record, and I don't know who I was trying to impress because I never ever showed it her. And I took it home, and I couldn't play it. We didn't have, you know, we had a little reel-to-reel tape recorder, which I used to tape songs on from, especially from the charts, from the old BBC charts. But then I bought the record, and I remember thinking, you know, none of my family, they like music, you know, they all played stuff, you know, for years and years. They played stuff on radio and Radio Luxembourg and all those things. So music was always around in my house, but none of them were ever musicians. None of my family, even to this day, are even in bands or things like that. But I thought, well, we're never going to have a record player. So I remember going to a catalogue, which I don't know if they still do catalogues these days, but and paid something like 52 pence a month for, you know, for a year or something, and I bought a Van der Molen stereo player, and extremely proud of that I was, and I took that home, and I remember sticking on my Hot Love, and by then I'd actually collected probably probably about 50 to 100 singles. And I then, you know, bought the record player and played to my heart's content and stuff. And over the years, I bought some older type record players and the old 60-style ones where you would stack 10 records on top of each other, and as the last one played, the next one would fall down and stuff. But I didn't realise at the time the significance of two things. One, Mark Bolan coming into my life as just as a musician and as a person and as someone, you know, it was the first person I idolised, you know. I never really idolised my dad. He died when I was 15 and I didn't really like him that much. I didn't, you know, he never played football with me. So I'd never idolised anybody other than, you know, one or two girls at school. But I really did idolise Mark Bolan, and I was very proud to meet him. And if I ever get sent on a desert island, and with only one thing, it would be my signed picture of Mark Bolan, definitely. Absolutely.
Now, it's a bit strange, isn't it? The Turtles doing the backing for that song. Do you know the reason why that was?
No, as I said, Tony Visconti in particular was doing a lot of work with Bowie, and he was a really good producer. Well, I thought, you know, ahead of his time, and there was a lot of American influence, and a lot of American artists were coming to England, you know, because we'd had the 60s boom, you know, the Beatles and all the 60s bands took over, you know, the Merseyside sort of thing, and taken sort of over in America. So I think at the end of the 60s, towards the early 70s, and obviously I think the Beatles broke up. Did they break up in 1969 or something? I can't remember, but it was about then. I think a lot of American artists and musicians wanted to be in England, and one of the ways to get yourself into another country, if you can't get your own material there initially, is to do collaborations. I mean, collaborations are very popular now. There's probably 10 in every top 40 chart every week now. But in them days, it was definitely doing the BVs, what we call BVs, which is the backing vocals. And clearly, you know, Tony Visconti had produced stuff in America, so that would have been the original source, probably. And also Fly Records were trying to do stuff in America. And as I said, Mark Bolan had very limited success. I mean, I go to America regularly, you know, I'm flying out again tonight, but I know that T-Rex and the glam rock is massive in America now, really massive. But when it was massive in England, it didn't really catch on in a big way in America. But Mark Bolan went to live there, and of course, he lived there for a long time, and that's where he met Gloria Jones, and Gloria Jones had big hits with, like, Tainted Love, and she'd written a lot of songs for other artists. And then, of course, she joined T-Rex, and Mark Bolan actually did a couple of duets with her. And tragically, she was the driver of the car when Mark Bolan died in 1977. So it's a funny world, because in them days there wasn't the internet. So if you were into the Turtles or you were into the Detroit Spinners, you'd go to Detroit to try and find them. You know, you'd go and hang out where you think they're going to be, or like with Elvis, you'd have gone to Memphis to try and find him, or, you know, a Dolly Parton, you think, well, I'll go to Nashville. Well, now you Google, you know, somebody's name, and you think, oh, look, there they are, look, they're playing down the road next week, or they're playing in Germany the following week, oh, look, I'm in Spain, look who's playing there. So it's a lot easier now to make that contact and to find your artists and your idols, but in fact, back in them days, even the press wasn't that great. I mean, we had the New Musical Express and Melody Maker, but they didn't do so much international stuff, and your research, you know, really, it was out of date, because you'd often research through books and that where the artist had come from. Now you just go on Wikipedia and it tells you everything, including a pack of lies often, you know. So that's made music a lot easier. And as I say, with Mark Bolan, I had no idea that would absolutely start my love affair with T-Rex. I saw them live 4 times, and I saw Mark Bolan. I met Mark Bolan once personally, which was absolutely incredible. And I've got a massive collection now. I've got one album by T-Rex worth about £750. And it's called A Cream Cage in August by T-Rex. And the reason that was is worth so much, when it was first released, it had it. If you remember the old albums, which is the 12-inch album, you'd open the sleeve, called a gatefold sleeve, and you'd have the sleeve notes, you'd have pictures, you'd have all the track listing. Well, this particular one, It was called A Cream Cage in August. So when you looked at the picture, you could see Mark Boland through a cage. But as you opened out the gatefold sleeve four times, the cage got thinner, and you know, and then suddenly you see Mark Boland's picture. But there was a cardboard shortage, so they only ever pressed 1,000. And I think I've got number 760. It's worth about £750.
Wow.
So I've got a few pounds worth of vinyl, I would think, in my, you know, my collection, definitely.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, thanks to Barry Times. And what I want you to do to end off this story behind the song, you can actually introduce the song. How about that?
I'll do that. Ladies and gentlemen, the first song I ever bought and the most influential song in my life, Hot Love by T-Rex.
She ain't
Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media.